whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's Hoffman Show, final hour here on the Team 980. It's a Wizards game day, so Dave Johnson will join us about 25 minutes from now. We also pick Commanders and Cowboys coming up before the end of the show. Real things, real people said in real microphones. Some funny sound to round out your Friday as you drive through the snow. Oh, Anthony, I forgot because it's dark out now. I can open my shades in my office here. And I could see, is it still snowing sideways outside? Do we have a fun little blizzard? We both can't be away from the microphones at once.
Not anymore. It looks like things are clear.
Okay. Well, tell you what. We're going to go with our pick six right now. And when you play this open, I'm gonna sprint over and open my shades so I can see outside.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is caught!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
You know what's sad, Anthony?
What?
All I see is the reflection of my lighting in the window pane. I can't actually even see outside. We tried. Okay, time for our Pick 6. On Fridays, the Pick 6 at 6 consists of us picking the 6 players that we think are most likely to affect the outcome of the game. There is one gigantic exception, and that is that we are not allowed to pick the quarterbacks. It's too obvious, it's too easy, and inevitably they're going to come up in the discussion anyway. So with that, Anthony, who's got number 1 this week? Are you up? Or am I on the tee?
You're up.
All right, hit the magic button, please. Micah Parsons. He's playing. There was a chance that he wasn't going to play because he injured his wrist yesterday in practice, but everything was apparently fine. He was a full participant today. He has no injury designation, and he is a game wrecker, and he is pretty much the only game wrecker on the field. I guess Terry and Jaden kind of get that designation as well. But for Dallas, he's the one guy that can really mess up your day. Sure, Jalen Tolbert's good. And maybe he even winds up coming up later in this pick six after what he did on the kickoff return against them the first time. But Micah is the guy that you have to worry about, especially because Tyler Biadasz is unlikely to play. He's listed as doubtful. So, yeah, it's obvious. No, this isn't earth-shattering. But, oh, my God, you have to have him playing for Micah Parsons, who, by the way, was, in the first game, deployed very differently. That's still the game that they have moved him around the front the most. They've done it a lot more in this back half of the season where Mike has been incredible and their defense has been a lot better until basically last week. But still, they have not lined him up inside as much as they did in that first Washington game. So I expect to see it again in part deux.
That's a great pick. I'm going to go with number 2.
Number 2.
Number 2, I was going to go with a lineman as well, but I'm going to pivot. I'm going to go to Kevontae Turpin for the Dallas Cowboys. Ever since, you know, I guess they downgraded CD to, I guess, IR, I think he's on now.
Yeah, he's on IR.
They've tried to, you know, get Kevontae Turpin involved more and more, and we know how dynamic he is when he has the ball in his hands. He did have a huge kickoff return against us. And then he also had a 38-yard kick return in the game we play here in Washington. So I'm expecting, you know, Dallas to try to get him a little bit more involved just because of how dynamic he is when he has the ball in his hands. They've lined him up in the backfield. They've gotten him passes in the screen game as well. So I'm expecting us to, you know, try to just, you know, limit him and limit his impact overall. I don't want to see him, you know, with chances to, you know, return anything just because of what he did last time against us.
I think that also last time, you know, that was, I'm trying to, was it Seibert was still the kicker? Yeah, and obviously he missed the extra point. But also, I asked Dan Quinn after the game, like, did you consider just kicking the ball out of the end zone? He's like, well, it's not as easy as you think. Zane Gonzalez can kick the ball out of the end zone. Lots of other NFL kickers kick the ball out of the end zone. Just especially, look, Tyler Owens out, Jordan McGee out, two of your top special teams guys. They're still going to be just fine, I think, if they have to protect. But, like, we know the ball flies in that building. Brandon Aubrey's one of the best in the game and can send the ball to the moon. Just kick the ball through the end zone this week. No Kevontae Turpin silliness. Let's do that.
Number three.
I typically try to avoid picking Terry McLaurin because, again, the stars are obvious. And I know I picked Parsons first, so I'm breaking my own rules this week. But there's been a significant change in Terry McLaurin's game since the first Cowboys game that's worth bringing up and worth mentioning. And that is they have moved him around significantly more. This was the Dallas game the first time around. Was basically the last straw for Terry as left side Terry, if you will. Since that game, he has been moving around not just to the right side, but he's lined up more in the slot as well. And there's actually some stats that I can give you to help back up slash inform that. Terry McLaurin, in their first matchup, first of all, it made him very easy to find. Deron Bland was on him for 23 of his 33 routes, allowing 2 catches for 6 yards on 2 targets. Of course, Terry had 3 catches for 96 yards, including the 86-yard miracle play lined up on the right side. But overall, McLaurin, if I can find this stat, here we go, lined up on the right side of the formation just 5.3 of his snaps, 5.3% of his snaps during the first 12 weeks of the season. So up to and including the Dallas game. Since that, week 13, he has done so on 19.8 of his snaps. So now 1 out of every 5 snaps, he is on the right side. It used to be 1 out of every 20. Particularly, McLaurin has lined up on such positions on 31% of his snaps during third and fourth downs. From that alignment, McLaurin has totaled 63 yards and 2 touchdowns on 32 routes, averaging 2 yards per route run. On the opposite side, he's recorded 130 yards and 2 touchdowns, average 1.8 yards per route run. So he's running similar stuff. He's you know, the production's pretty much the same, but it's higher in general because he's harder to find. It's harder to play in your defense. I assume Deron Bland will follow him around. He followed A.J. Brown around last week. That's kind of what they do down there. But I think Terry moving around more, the ability to get him the ball quickly, especially after he had a quiet game last week, like, I expect a screen to Terry on the first series. That's kind of how they do it, and with good reason. He brings such energy to the game. Terry McLaurin, have yourself a day to celebrate your Pro Bowl appearance. All right, that's the first three in our pick six. We'll get to the last three players that we think will have such a big or an outsized impact in this game next. But first, let's get an update on the latest in the world of women's sports presented by Wawa Chicken. How you wanna at Wawa with customizable crispy or roasted chicken sandwiches. It's the Hoffman Show. Dave Johnson joins us, talking a little Zardos. Alex Sarr, Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month. Gotta love that. Dave's coming up in 10 minutes or so. Probably closer to 15, if we're being honest with ourselves, because we have the back half of the pick six to get to now here as we tell you who we think is going to matter the most in the matchup between the Commanders and the Cowboys. We've broken our own rules a little bit to get started. Specifically, I have, because I picked a couple of star players, but with only one real star for the Cowboys remaining, with CeeDee Lamb hurt, Dak Prescott long out, I picked Micah Parsons one, Anthony with an excellent pick of Kevontae Turpin, the Cowboys ace return man, Pro Bowler himself this week, number two. One of the two Commanders Pro Bowlers, Terry McLaurin, third, because of how much Terry's game has changed and how they've deployed him since the Cowboys game the first time around, which means, Anthony, you are up for
number four.
I'm sort of kind of torn. Would it be crazy for me to pick a third Cowboy? Would it be crazy?
No, because I think I know who you're going to go with. I'm going to start typing in the doc. Is that who you're going with?
Let me go over to the doc. Yes, it is Rico Dowdle.
Rico.
He's had 100-yard games in 4 of his last 5 games. They've definitely shown an emphasis, you know, of getting him the ball, trying to establish the run. They should have done this earlier in the season. I was surprised they, you know, went away from it. But he's proven to be a solid back in the league. And I actually came across a crazy stat. He's the first undrafted running back to ever have or to ever rush for 1,000 yards in Cowboys franchise history. So I think that just speaks to a testament to like who he's been for them all season. And if we can limit him, if, you know, we can go out there and do away with one of the weaknesses that, you know, has plagued this Commanders defense all season long, and that's the rushing defense, I think there will be some good momentum going into the playoffs. And I know Joe Witt was asked about it all this week, you know, why is the run game so bad, you know, and how to necessarily address it. So I think that would be a huge focus in this game with Dallas down so many people.
Yeah, I think it's a great call because it encompasses a lot of things that the Commanders have to do. Their run fits at the second and third level were not very good last week, but also the D-line clearly did not do enough, and they made that huge change in the second half to put Daron Payne out there on the edge, and that's a nice club to have in your bag, but it's not one you want to have to pull out. You'd like to have your rotation of those guys inside, have Furl and Dorrance Armstrong and Dante Fowler setting the edge, Javonte Jean-Baptiste setting the edge, and not have to deal with that. But if you do need to go that route, one, is Daron your answer? Two, do you try John out there as well? Probably not. Like, I don't know why you then moved Daron back inside if it worked well. But it is something to consider. And so I'm curious if they deploy that personnel package at all, or do they put it back in the bag and then break it out if they need it against, say, Tampa or L.A.? Or do they go back to it, get a little more practice with it? And obviously stopping the run becomes very important. I do think it's worth mentioning that, you know, the run game could take a twist for Dallas if they decide to play Trey Lance. Although the reporting from Dallas is that it's very unlikely for what feels almost like a silly reason, but actually like respect to the Cowboys if this is true, because Cooper Rush has a pretty significant bonus if he plays 55% of the snaps this season. And he's going to have to play like 60 snaps to get it. He's currently at 52.8. And so they need like a 60 snap game where he plays 100% of the snaps for him to get across that threshold. And thus playing Trey Lance for any snap, unless they have two quarterbacks out there and some kind of trickeration, means that that's one snap closer to Cooper Rush not getting his bonus. Unless they're going to screw over Cooper Rush, which does not seem to be how they want to treat Cooper Rush, who's treated them very well. Cooper Rush's record as a Cowboys starter is like 10-2 or something. I mean, the Cowboys have won 4 of 6 with him there, and he was like 6-0 coming into the season. It's kind of wild. But it's not like he's exactly killed it. But it does feel like it'll just be the traditional run game, not some kind of tricked up quarterback run game with Trey Lance out there and Cooper Rush playing. Meanwhile, on the Commander side of things.
Number 5.
My last pick, I'm going to go with Michael Dieter, the center, who's likely to play in place of Tyler Biadasz. And the Commanders' run game has been inconsistent. It has been particularly bad when Biadasz is not out there, although they did get going in the second half last week after Biadasz had gotten hurt and Dieter was there. The other big thing, though, I wanted to mention the Commanders' offensive line because of all of the penalties that they have picked up. And Dieter has had some when he has played, but Biadasz has had some as well. Sam Cosmi is just having a funky couple of weeks here where the play actually was a little better last week, but there's obviously some really high-profile penalties that the Commanders chalk up to a technique issue where the referees are seeing something in a way that's not actually a hold but looks like a hold, and so they got to get that straightened out. You know, Coleman's had some, Wiley's had some, Lucas has had some, Trent Scott's had, everybody who's playing on this offensive line. Too many penalties. And I would just like a game, Anthony, where they play really clean football and remember what that feels like going into the playoffs. Because they can beat the Dallas Cowboys committing 7 or 8 penalties. They just can. They're better. They are not going to be able to do that against the best of the best. It's wild that they did it against Philly a couple weeks ago, but there's obviously a lot of weird stuff that winds up happening in that game. I just think that getting the offensive line back playing good, clean football where they can go on these 10-12 play drives and not have to overcome a 1st-and-20 twice would be it would make everybody feel good inside. And isn't that what the holiday season's all about?
It's all about, man.
All right. Who you got wrapping up for number 6?
Number six. I tried to go away from these guys, but I'm going to go back to Benjamin St. Juice. I actually want to see Benjamin St. Juice out there a little bit more. I think we took for granted. I'm not going to say like he's a, you know, the best corner out there.
Who's we?
I would say me and.
Who's we?
Me and my army. That's me.
Damn, but, Anthony, there were so many people in that army trying to fight me, I didn't even realize you were in it.
Yeah. I mean, as much crap as we gave, you know, Benjamin St. Jude for those bad plays and those poor spots, on a down and down basis, like, he played solid. And I just want to see a game where he can, you know, just play discipline and be foul free. And
I'd like to see a game where he plays solid and doesn't lose his mind on a 3rd and 15 and do something incredibly silly.
With that too.
Yeah. No. And again,
but we might need him though, for real.
My argument was never that he was good or that the bad plays that you saw were fake and your eyes were deceiving you. It was just simply that he was better than the next guy. And that was, and that, like, down in, down out, he's pretty good. And like last week, he actually thought he played pretty well. It was 15 snaps. And I actually like the plan that Joe Witt suggested of some kind of rotation. I think that Benjamin St. Juice should be the starter. Although, if you wanted to say for game plan purposes, going back to your Rico Dowdle of it all, that if you want a stronger run unit out there and Michael Davis is your guy, fine. I just think it limits you in terms of the coverages that you should be calling with him on the field. You're going to have to play a ton of cover two. And the Commanders actually played a some two-man last week and really, like, passed stuff off well. It was a good coverage for them. Some key situations that Penix was lost with nowhere to go against some two-man. So I don't hate the idea of Michael Davis as long as he's got safety help over the top and he can play like that, where it's, you're not giving up these deep outs and deep comebacks and things because you're so scared of getting beat over the top. Now, I would say the same thing about Juice, who's more capable of covering that stuff, but also, don't panic. Just stay within yourself. So, I think it's a great call. It's one of the stories of the week. I mean, we kind of hit with our last two, the two big stories of the week, the offensive line and the cornerback situation. So, I think it's a good job by us. Pat on the back, and I'm very curious to see how it goes against a CeeDee Lamb-less offense there for Dallas. And can the combination of those two, where that's kind of been where they're at their best this year, when they've rotated, can that be the best version of the Commanders defense that exists without Marshawn Lattimore, who is out for the game on Sunday? When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, Dave Johnson joins us. It's a Wizards game day. We'll talk to Dave about the Wizards' win earlier this week over the Chicago Bulls and Alex Saar winning Rookie of the Month in the Eastern Conference.
Right corner, Kispert open for three. It's there.
Time to get the radio party started.
Feeds now the right block of Al Saar. Slam!
It's time for Dave Johnson on a Wizards game day.
Blocked by Colomoli. Left wing George. 3 on the clock for three. It's there.
Feel like busting loose. Busting loose.
Crossover step back.
It is a Wizards game day, which means Dave Johnson is with us here on the Team 980. Dave, how are we doing, my friend?
You know, doing well, and it's great to connect, and happy New Year to everyone. And I'm coming to you, obviously, from New Orleans, and it's needless to say, been a, I don't know how to describe what they've gone through the last few days here that we all know about. And, you know, there was even talk about, well, should the Sugar Bowl have been played yesterday, or, you know, obviously we're playing a basketball game tonight. But the reality and part of showing the strength, I believe, is that you do find a way to move on. But, you know, it's interesting. There's a certain calm and almost a numbness from the people here in New Orleans. And I just mentioned that because I've come here, you know, so many times over the years, and it lives up to its reputation as kind of a party city, and everybody's having a good time. You kind of feel that vibe, and it's a different vibe. But this is certainly a city that's proven to be resilient for many reasons, and will get them back to full fledged celebrating. But it is a little bit different. But you know what? Part of tonight is the healing process. People get together for something as silly as a basketball game.
That's well put, and I know that the security was incredibly tight for the Sugar Bowl yesterday. You guys are obviously, for those that haven't been to New Orleans, the basketball arena is literally right next door. It's basically attached, and I think underground it is attached to the what is now known as the Caesars Superdome. Is there extra all that stuff for you guys tonight as well for people going to the basketball game? City still pretty much on high alert.
No. Yeah, I mean, you know, we had a police escort to the game, but I think we've always had that because of, you know, when we're down here, sometimes it's Mardi Gras, it's a traffic or that type of thing. But you definitely notice the presence. And one thing we noticed yesterday when we were coming into the city, I believe it was obviously Bourbon Street still blocked off. And, it just was much different. I just went down last night to just have a sandwich at the lobby bar, and it's in a hotel where usually, they had a band playing, a trio playing of jazz music, and I was literally the only person at the bar. Whereas in past years, the place is always buzzing because this is a, you know, if it's not a sports meeting city, it's a convention meeting city, or it's a city where people come together, and typically it's all about fun. So certainly, you know, things change. But as I said, it's that mix of year. You don't forget what happened a couple of days ago, but it just gives you more resolve that, hey, we got a day that, you know, we're going to make the most of it. We're gonna celebrate something tonight.
No doubt about it. So speaking of celebrating, Dave, no easy transition, but the Wizards do have something to celebrate. Not only a win the other night against Chicago, but Alex Starr named the Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month for December. What have you seen in terms of the number two overall pick's growth that has gotten him playing at that level? What, you know, this Wizards season has felt so long in so many ways, but all of a sudden you blink and you're like, oh, wait, that was for December? This kind of happened pretty quickly.
Well, you know, I mean, the big number for me in December, and Brian Keefe wouldn't like this because his focus is on defense. Look, Alex Starr is getting it done on defense, but he's shooting 45% beyond the arc. And, you know, making at least three three-pointers in a game now it seems like a regular basis. He's made a three-pointer in at least 14 straight or in 14 straight now. And so, all right, you have a seven-footer that can do that. And he can, you know, stretch the floor, and that opens up so many things. But this is why, you know, as people are saying, we're starting to see in the second month, you know, of his career, you know, why he was picked second overall, you know, by the Washington Wizards. And it makes, you know, it's why, and I hope we remember this conversation there, you know, when he goes 0 for 12 at one point or misses 12 straight shots in summer league, you know, just relax. There's a transition that has to be made, and it's something that, you know, Jordan Poole's talked about with all the young guys. He's saying, you know, he reminds them that he couldn't, when he came into the NBA, he couldn't, you know, throw a ball in the ocean or hit the broadside of a barn door or whatever cliche you want to use. He was a 27% three-point shooter. There's an adjustment on so many levels, and now what's gratifying is, you know, you're seeing it's becoming more comfortable for him. I don't want to say comfortable, but part of that jump is, you know, we're in an 82 game schedule, and where every team, including, you know, I get it, the Pelicans have the worst record in the NBA, but it doesn't matter. Their NBA players are going to be facing tonight, so it's competition like all of these rookies have never faced. But, you know, how about Alex Starr among his highlights of the month? His defense without fouling on some guy named Carl Anthony Towns at the end of the New York Knicks game that went into overtime. If he commits a foul or he allows Carl Anthony Towns to get that lob, the game doesn't go into overtime. And I know the Knicks eventually won in overtime, but they would have won in regulation. So it's little things like that that just, you know, it's Sarr, and quite frankly, and the record shows it as well, for the whole team. And this team, even in, you know, game losses, the Knicks, the Thunder, whatever you want to put to, they're playing the right way.
No doubt about it. And, you know, you look at the other number that I think stands out for me, Dave, for Alex in that game Wednesday over the Bulls, is he had five assists in that game. And his ability to be a playmaker on the short roll, or if he does get the rare post up, or if he is going to be floating around the perimeter shooting threes, like, you got to understand when to take it and when to move the ball. And it just feels like he has gotten, and obviously you could say the same thing on varying levels for Bub and for Keshawn George. It just feels like Alex is always had, like, the game was a little fast for him, but you could tell, like, he has a good feel, and now it feels like the game slowed down for him a little bit as we get into January and what will ultimately be the back half of his rookie season.
Yeah, no, well, and part of it is also, you know, what we're seeing now is a group of guys that are playing, have played together now for some time. That was, you know, that was also part of the transition. This is, you know, this was a team with so many new faces and new players. It was going to take time just to get that understanding. All right, well, you know, Bub likes the ball here. Or if I do this for Jordan, you know, it puts him in a good spot. So, you know, it's those kind of fine details that make a difference. And that's, you know, that's the encouraging part about, you know, all of our rookie class. And again, that basketball, that cliche basketball IQ, but, you know, the feel for the game that he has, that Bub Carrington has, that Keshawn George has. We hit it this draft class, all three first round picks, and that doesn't always happen. And I know it's early days, we're only a couple months in the season, but I've been watching this a long time, and these three, they're gonna help this team rise to where it needs to be. And, you know, by the way, Bilal Coulibaly will not play tonight because of a non-COVID illness. But, you know, he's just growing. And this is what you want to see in the second year. And you know, to the point where he's confident on the ball. You know, Alex Starr, instead of trying, you know, he still gives up weight to everybody he plays against. But he's, instead of trying to be finesse down low, he's powering up and getting N1s. Those are the kind of details that we celebrate each night. That, you know, no, we're not going to have a parade on Connecticut Avenue over it, but, you know, this is how this team is going to get to where it needs to be.
Yep, and you get to call a game tonight where they definitely have a great shot to stack their second straight win. You mentioned the Pelicans now, thanks to that Washington win over the Bulls, the worst record in the NBA, losers of, I think if I counted correctly, 10 straight and 19 of 20. They do get Jose Alvarado back on their side of it tonight, but still no Zion Williamson, no Brandon Ingram. It is CJ McCollum running around with a bunch of young kids, and it's not going great for New Orleans. So tonight, you got Dave, you got Glenn, you got the whole crew tonight from New Orleans, coming up about an hour from now, 8 o'clock tip here on the Team 980, 7:45 pregame. Dave, appreciate your time as always, sir. Enjoy New Orleans and then get home safely.
We'll get home, and I hear tell there's some snow coming, but we'll make it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a nice bluster earlier today, although it doesn't seem to have stuck. So hopefully you guys can get back in before the next wave comes in. Dave, appreciate your time as always. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, man.
That's Dave Johnson with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back here on the Team 980, there's one order of business remaining, and then one order of fun. The business, we pick Commanders Cowboys, our final regular season Commanders pick. The fun, real things, real people said, into real microphones. Wrapping up on the Hoffman Show here on the Team 980. It is Friday. It is, and it feels like Friday, Anthony. I feel like last week was so weird because Christmas, and then we were just all confused. And in the middle of the week felt confusing being off on Wednesday. But yesterday felt very Thursday, and today feels very Friday.
I'm not going to lie. Earlier today, it felt like a Saturday. That's how much of a day.
Yeah, the show's been looming all day.
Yeah. I mean, mine is the work.
For me. Before, for me, I've known all day that we got this thing to do between 4 and 7. And we've done the damn thing. I've also been working a ton today. I coached some classes this morning, and then or coached a class this morning and did my own workout. Got home, was putting together all the digital stuff from the show yesterday. So it's been a long day. I'm tired.
Tired. I'm tired.
When are you flying flying out to Indy?
I leave tomorrow morning at. Take off at 8:40, so I'll probably get to Dulles around like 7:45.
Okay, so you got an early morning for sure, because Dulles is far.
Yeah,
that's a choice you made. All right, we got one choice to make now before we hit real things, real people said in real microphones, and that is who's going to win between the Commanders and the Cowboys. And by the way, Anthony, you did finally get the counting down. Anthony is 5 games behind me in the standings on our picks for the season, and there are 5 games where we have picked opposite teams on Sunday. So Anthony's got to go 5-0 just to tie, unless he wants to go Oppo Jinxo on me on Commanders and Cowboys. Anthony, if you do that, you're going to have to pick the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Commanders get their revenge.
Ah.
I think that they may have perhaps mentally gone 1-2-3 Cancun last week. I think the Dallas reporters after the game are not going to wait, or not going to be able to wait to get around Jerry Jones and be like, hey, are you going to shoot Mike McCarthy into the sun? His contract expires, by the way, after the game. So, you know, they have an exclusive negotiating window, I believe. But we could definitely be, you know, next show we do is Black Monday. I think that's probably worth mentioning as well on Monday. So we'll have all kinds of news to react to around the NFL on top of Commanders playoff news. We are going to, by the way, go live on Sunday night after the 4 p.m. games, because we'll know the Commanders playoff opponent. We just won't know the time of the game yet. So we can look forward to that on Sunday. And by we, I mean I, and I'm just going to say it. I'm gonna hit Grant up. So it might be me and Grant, as we're gonna play Paulson swap, because Logan's obviously in Dallas with the team, and so he's gonna be getting on the plane and flying back. So me, Grant, live on the Team 980's YouTube page, 106.7 The Fan's YouTube page, my YouTube page at Craig Hoffman. Take command, instant reaction show on Sunday night. But Anthony, I got the Commanders one final time this season in the regular season. We'll see what we do with our game pick in the playoffs. Are you going Oppo Jinxo and giving yourself a chance at the win?
Craig, you already know. I'm going with the Commanders, baby. Left hand up.
I knew you were going to do that. Yeah. Look, there's no use in losing by an extra game.
Yeah, there's no point.
That would be.
I'd rather us tie.
Within the context of this show, this would not be funny. This would not make for a good week next week. I'm not rooting for this. Within the context of this show, to an objective observer, it would be hilarious if you went either 4-1 or 5-0, and then the Cowboys won.
I don't think it would be funny at all, to be honest. I think we would be scratching our head and asking ourselves, are the Commanders as good as we think they are? I don't think we would really be too focused in on this. Just saying.
We're also not objective observers, so I did cover my bases. Last but not least, on a Friday, let's give the people what they want. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, for Real Things Real People Said in Real Microphones. What's in the magical folder of sound today, Anthony Haney?
All right, Mr. Craig Hoffman, we start off with Kevin Harlan. Actually, no, I don't think we can do that. We don't have enough time.
We don't have enough time. That's also a throwback. Let's get some fresh material.
All right, so we have D-Rose sitting down with Sham Sharania, and he was asked whether or not he would love a statue outside of, the United Airways Center?
No, the United Center in
Chicago. The United Center in Chicago.
Yeah.
And here's their back and forth.
Do you agree with Taj that you should get a statue? Do you agree with, I want to say 99.9% of Chicago, they should have your jersey retired?
The statue, the way people have been creating statues, no. I do not want no statue.
You saw the D-Wade?
No statue. Jerry, no statue, bro. Please, Michael, no statue. And the jersey thing, jersey being retired, I would love that. That would be my way getting close to the top 75. You feel me?
Yeah.
And it relates, and I'm only saying that because it relates to the MVP thing, where it's only a hand or a small group that got that trophy back there.
One, that's hilarious. Two, I do believe that's the correct thing. Derrick Rose does not deserve a statue. I mean, then again, Dwayne Wade didn't deserve that statue. He deserved a better one. But, you know, we can talk about the artistic creativity of artists a different day. D. Rose was not good enough for long enough to warrant a statue, considering the other statue that's outside the United Center is Michael Jeffrey Jordan. However, he did win an MVP and was the second best player in the league behind LeBron James for like a 2-year stretch and powered a bunch of playoff appearances, like three or four. So you should get that. All right, that's it. That's all. We'll see you on Monday.